You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of our show, where we discuss the latest news about all things Apple. We're recording on Thursday, May 7th, 2015. On today's episode, we actually have a special guest interview with Georgia Dow from iMore.com and Jim Young, the principal UX designer at Dell. We're going to get their thoughts on the Apple Watch in the interview, so stay tuned to the end of the episode for that. On today's episode, Daniel is back from Europe and actually went to the Colette store in Paris to see the Apple Watch sales in person. Also, we'll talk about Apple Watch third-party design guidelines, rumors of the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, Apple details its new AppleBot web crawler, and more.
Hi, I'm Neil.
I'm Shane.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Steven. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. We want to kick it off talking about the Apple Watch and Daniel, who's back on the show. Welcome back. Back from some travels over in Europe. And we want to get your thoughts on the Apple Watch. You got to visit Colette, which is a boutique store. It was one of the few that actually had stock of the Apple Watch that people could buy, actually go in person and buy. So go ahead. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it was interesting to see an Apple launch in another country. I've seen a lot of launches in the United States of iPhones and iPad and various devices. Also interesting, this is a very different product for Apple. And it's also very constrained and complicated by the fact that there's so many different options. It's so personalized. And so none of the Apple stores, none of Apple's own stores have any product. They're functioning solely as a fitting kind of consultation, having people be comfortable with the model that they want, the size and the band and the model. Mm-hmm. And then they go and order it themselves online and they have it shipped directly to them. That's not the most ideal thing for people who want one right away.
Right.
But right now, I think the supply is so constrained. And Apple is incredibly good at inventory management, at minimizing how much inventory they carry. So if you think about how they would have to manage this launch for the initial surge of people, if they stocked all of their individual retail stores, it'd be very difficult to manage to have the right products at every store, given the fact that they can't make them fast enough.
Right.
So right now it's not what they want to do, but it's kind of the best way to roll it out. So the only stores that have any inventory are not Apple stores, and they're also not the department stores that Apple's working with. Some of the higher-end department stores, including Selfridges in London and in Paris, the Galeries Lafayette, which both those stores are kind of like a Bloomingdale's or a Macy's, a high-end retail store that has a lot of fashion brands, and both of them also have a lot of very high-end watches and jewelry. And Apple Watch in both stores, in London and in Paris, is being sold in sort of a special boutique kind of store within a store experience that is very much aimed at fashion buyers.
Right.
They're right next to these watches that in Selfridges, they have what they call the Wonder Room. It's not a room, it's a huge area. And there are certain areas where they sell different brands. And Apple has taken over kind of a portion that had been a revolving different brands in it. And it's now a permanent store for Apple Watch. And it's being sold next to very expensive watches that I saw one that cost £250,000. That's wow. Something like $400,000.
So the Apple Watch Edition doesn't look so expensive there.
Yeah, it's not at the high end of the expensive things. Now, there's not a line of people waiting to buy this $400,000 watch.
Right.
That's encrusted with diamonds. And there's also not a line of people in either of those stores or Apple's retail stores, because there's plenty of opportunity. There was always kind of an open space where you could just walk up and do a fitting. Mm-hmm. And I arrived before it actually went on sale, when they were doing pre-orders, and it was quite busy with people looking at it. Some were curious, some were obviously interested in buying it. But nobody could buy one until, what was the launch date, the 24th?
The 24th, yeah.
And on the 24th, the only place you could get them in the cities that I visited was Colette, which is a fashion boutique retailer, a very small store, actually right between Apple's two stores in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple blocks to each store.
Huh.
So there was a line around the block. And a week later, there was still a line when I came by of 70 people waiting early in the morning.
So
buy a watch.
So you have the check out the pictures. You could definitely see the line there. Were they getting like new shipments every day that people would actually line up and actually get a watch if they came early enough? Or are they just hoping they're going to be there when the store opens up?
They appeared to be getting inventory. I actually talked to the guy about inventory, and he was very cagey about about the details. However, he was saying that basically people who had lined up were getting what they the model that they wanted.
Really?
So given the fact that there's very few stores around the planet that have an actual inventory where you can pick one up, Apple is able to have stock in those stores. Probably a variety of things.
It seems so strange, especially, you know, that video from Angela Arendt that came out talking about why they're doing everything online. And you have people like Neil, who has yet to get his Apple Watch and who ordered it at 3 a.m., you know, as soon as pre-orders were open. And yet this store in Paris is just kind of handing them out, and they seemingly have a variety of models. You know, it doesn't seem to be limited. So that's it.
Are they selling the Sport there as well as the base model?
Well, I would guess the Sport is the base model. I mean,
they're selling all the models there, the lower end as well, even though it's a high end fashion place or whatever.
Yes, it's not a terribly high end fashion place. I mean, they have affordable things. It's more kind of a place where people go to get fancy new things.
Okay,
They have kind of pedestrian products in there. I mean, too. I mean, it's not that everything is expensive there. That it's kind of a place where people have lined up to get a lot of things. So they're used to doing that kind of thing. The line was not moving quickly.
Colette is like Urban Outfitters crossed with the MoMA shop, really.
I see.
But so, I was standing there, and then one person would go in maybe every couple of minutes. It was not a fast moving line. Because they were doing like this fitting process, and it wasn't just, you know, people running through and grabbing the model that they wanted.
That's very interesting. And then, so the people actually doing the fitting, I guess they were Colette employees?
The people that I talked to appear to be Colette employees. And that's in contrast to both at Galeries Lafayette and at Selfridges in London. They were, those store within a store areas were staffed by Apple Store employees.
Did the Colette employees get some kind of training before the watch went on sale?
Oh, I'm sure they did, yes.
I'm curious. I don't know if you asked them, but I don't know if it's training from Apple or if it was training from like Colette management and they got instructions from Apple. I mean, that seems
strange. I'm not sure, but I'm sure that Apple would work with any of their partners to make sure that they had things kind of the way they want them to do it.
Right. It seems bizarre, especially how you're describing it now. But, you know, what also broke this week, which is interesting, you know, Apple released design guidelines for third-party watch bands, which we weren't sure if they were actually going to support. But they have them out there. They have the guidelines. So any band manufacturer can make, you know, a quote-unquote official third-party watch band. And I'd be curious to see if these fashion boutiques like Colette and even here in America like Tiffany's or other high-end fashion stores would make bands branded for them, you know, like a Tiffany & Co. Apple Watch band. And, that, you know, clearly Apple is expecting it and allowing people to do it. So I'd be curious to see that.
And that's almost certainly part of their Made for iOS type program where they're getting a licensing cut on it.
Yeah, they're actually selling the lug connectors separately. You can buy them from, just like you can buy a Lightning connector, you can buy a watch band lug connector.
And I've seen
Apple. One thing that I thought was kind of strange, a couple things I observed. One was the frustration of employees working at places like Galeries Lafayette. They were frustrated that they didn't have stock because people are obviously going there wanting to buy it, and there's not that much interest if all you can do is try it on, because you can try it on anywhere. I mean, you can try it on any Apple store, so you don't have to go to the store to do it. So those people obviously would like to have inventory to sell.
Oh, yeah. I also find it strange. I got mine with the Milanese Loop, and after using it for a while, I really would like to get a sport band. And even, you know, you can't even go to a store and buy just a sport band, you know, at the Apple Store or anywhere else right now. And still online, it says delivery in May. But we,
yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm wondering, is there a bottleneck with the producing the bands itself, like the colors and stuff? Because the only one they were offering as part of the developer program to send them out earlier was the blue band.
Right.
And I know people that ordered the blue band like up to a couple days before the launch ended up getting it on launch day, right, as opposed to, you know, I ordered one a week before with a pink band for my wife and it's still scheduled to ship in June. So what's the bottleneck there? Is it because the blue band is easier to manufacture? I mean, I really don't understand.
It is interesting too. If you look on the Apple Store website, the blue band is the only one that says 2 to 4 weeks shipping. Every other color sport band is just says May, quote unquote, which is we're in May. So it's kind of strange to be that vague still. But one of the other articles that went up yesterday on Apple Insider on Wednesday, that's in the Apple Store iOS app, some of the pickup in store options are actually appearing as kind of like a grayed out option, which that wasn't, you know, even a choice at all before. But now you can see in the screenshot we have on the in the article, it says available to ship in July as an option or pick up in store available soon at your local Apple store. So it's interesting that they look like that's going to be coming soon, whereas, again, still people who have pre-ordered 3 a.m. On pre-order day have not gotten theirs.
Yeah, it just seems strange that you have this technological marvel on your wrist and the thing that may be holding it up is the color of the band.
Right. And it may be, you know, what happened with the Taptic engine, you know, there were the two factories making the Taptic engine. One factory had a bunch of, you know, not working ones or malfunctioning ones. So they had to scrap all of those and go with just the one factory. And that may have held up production on the Apple, on the actual watch part. But, you know, it could be a thing where one factory is producing the black bands, one factory is producing the blue ones. And, I don't know, for some reason, one does it faster or I don't know.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they're selling a product with all these accessories that are options creates a problem. It's not unique to Apple. DJI has the same issues with, you know, if you buy one of their drones and you break something on it, to get a replacement part has been really difficult, especially when new models came out. You just couldn't find replacement parts anywhere at any cost.
Right.
And it's just because, it, you know, you think how hard is it to make these little plastic fins or whatever, or, you know, a case part that's just this piece of molded plastic. Why can't they get stock around the world? But yeah, it's a difficult logistical problem. Right. So the fact that it's happening a couple days, you know, in the first couple months after launch, it's not really that terribly surprising. One of the things that I thought was kind of interesting was, on one hand, they're making very exclusive parts, like the gold Milanese loop that they gave to some fancy people.
All right. The gold loop bracelet.
Even if you're one of those buyers that drops $70,000 for the Apple Watch Edition, you cannot buy a gold anything else. In fact, it only comes with the classic buckle and the modern buckle and the plastic band.
Yeah.
There's no option to get links or anything else. You can buy them separately. You can't buy it with the watch. And if you buy it separately, it doesn't match the same color. So you have a gold watch with a stainless steel band that even the edges are stainless steel, so it's going to look kind of a little bit weird.
Yeah. So we'll see what comes with the, you know, third party bands, and if fashion boutiques start making their own bands, and, you know, maybe Apple, you know, when we come to holiday time, will release some of those, like the gold link bracelet or other style bands that you know, we've seen on celebrities and such, but not for sale. So we'll see what happens there. I do want to move along to the iPad Pro rumors. We had a few articles this week showing some industrial renderings of the supposed 12.9-inch iPad Pro back, and also images of a case that a manufacturer made out of the measurements they received. And also another article, again, all these will be in show notes, that the iPad Pro might feature a Bluetooth stylus, Force Touch, NFC, and more. And I thought it was also strange that these rumors are coming out just when Apple releases a mini site dedicated to the iPad and how the iPad can, quote unquote, change everything in this new promotion. So, interesting stuff. We've heard about an iPad Pro with a larger screen for a while now. I have, you know, aside from some maybe commercial use, I don't know the kind of consumer reception a very large iPad would get. I mean, do any of you have a desire for a 13-inch iPad?
I would buy it. I am not sure that it would, you know, kickstart or reinvigorate sales the way that, you know, some people would like to see iPad kind of get back on top in terms of how it's been declining in recent quarters. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, I think retail would be a good way for them to kind of kick some of the sales up, especially with the partnership with IBM and some of the other specialty apps that are being created for businesses and stuff like that. It was one of our sources that reached out to us and gave us some of the information about the new so-called iPad Pro. It's expected to have like an almost 13-inch screen. And one of the things they said that it would have is an NFC reader in there. And obviously, I don't think that people are going to be using their iPad Pro, their 13-inch iPad, to pay for Apple Pay at a store. But you can see it being used in reverse, where it could become the all-in-one kiosk that accepts mobile payments and stuff like that. Because a lot of iPads currently being used for kiosks, and so to have a bigger one with some more functionality and some more, you know, input options, that might be something that would get some sales for Apple there. Shane also had an interesting idea, and we were talking about the other day when we got the tip from our source, that it might also be a way to have quicker Bluetooth pairing with accessories like this rumored stylus, and also maybe, you know, like future Beats headphones or something like that. So imagine if you didn't have to go into the settings on your iPad or maybe your future iPhone or whatever, and instead an Apple-branded accessory and maybe even in the future third-party accessories could automatically pair if they were trusted devices and stuff like that. Right. So if they started opening up the NFC, then there would be a few more opportunities beyond Apple Pay that could be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Why would you buy a 13-inch iPad?
Again, like for personal use, I feel like the iPad Air is such a good size. I don't want to hold something bigger. But, you know, for commercial use or businesses, you know, a lot of people use the iPads in like kiosk style, like welcome areas or welcome centers or kind of like navigational type things. Like for those use cases, I could see like businesses using it or again, like point of sale systems, like Neil was saying. But I don't see personal use being, I don't know.
I read digital comics, and the 9.7-inch screen is slightly too small, so it has to downsize the page so it doesn't fit properly, or it's just shrunken down and doesn't look right. So a larger iPad would be better for that. And I read a lot on my iPad, so
if you had just told me that, I would have sent you a digital comic reader from Japan.
Well,
I mean, there's 100 models available. You don't need a 13-inch iPad. I mean, I completely agree that it's better for the enterprise for some things, but I just can't see a scenario in which members of the general public are toting around a 13-inch iPad.
Right.
And Apple
doesn't
sell
it. But who totes it around? I mean, my iPad never leaves my house unless I throw it in a backpack and take it somewhere else. It's not like my iPad is not something that I use on the train or anything like that. I just bring my phone at that point, so...
I mean, maybe if the people who use their iPad as their primary computer and they do it with a keyboard case, then it could almost be like a 13-inch laptop. But
And I think that's going to be part of it too, because our source told us that it's going to have a USB-C input and, again, the stylus and all that kind of stuff. So I think that you can't just think of it as an iPad. I think it's probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of a keyboard accessory or something like that. I know that this conjures up thoughts of a Microsoft Surface or something, but if Apple could maybe do it in a more elegant way, I could see it being a more viable laptop replacement for some people.
Yeah.
So at that point, what is its victory over a MacBook?
Well, one of the things that people are using iPads for right now is between there's people in the enterprise that are doing things like you're talking about, doing checklists and monitoring situations, things like that, and also point of sale, cash register type applications. And in between, one of the most useful and most obvious things for an iPad is sales consultations, especially in sort of a high-end situation where you're doing a boutique sale or you're sitting down with a client and showing them houses or some kind of product like that, where it's a nicer experience than a computer. But like what you're talking about with the digital comics, the iPad is not big enough for that. I've seen a lot of situations where people are showing, they're selling with their iPad, and it's really good for what it does, but it's almost too small to it's a great size for sitting on the couch. But if you're sitting at a table and showing somebody options and having them, you know, collaboratively tapping on the screen, the full-size iPad is pretty small.
Yeah.
If you had a bigger device, it's much better for working with another person. So that hits things like education.
Right.
It sales consultation type things where salespeople are bringing a pad around and closing deals because they have this very rich experience. And then also there's a lot of applications in the enterprise where things like healthcare, where a doctor is sitting with a patient, showing them x-rays, things like that. So there's a lot of applications for a bigger iPad.
Shane, you asked, you know, what's the advantage over a MacBook? Well, I think one advantage would be you're looking at the most successful and most diverse app store on the planet is on iOS. And so if you were to have something that was a could do laptop-style functions on an iPad, you have, frankly, more apps available on your iPad than you would on your Mac.
I just don't see the consumer appeal. I completely understand the business appeal. I just don't see the consumer appeal. And Apple is a consumer company. So is what we're saying here essentially that this is the tablet version of an eMac? It's a tablet designed for one use case, except in that case it was education, and here it's business?
I see it being a potential laptop replacement. I see it being for people that like these convertible style devices, and I think that Apple will do something that kind of makes it stand out from the pack and make it a little bit different.
And maybe we'll see with iOS 9, you know, at WWDC this year, maybe they will finally do those, you know, two apps at a time on a screen kind of thing on the iPad Pro.
Yeah, if you could get some multitasking on there, stuff like that, you know, a decent keyboard dock, you know, some stylus input, it could be a pretty versatile little machine that's still more portable than a laptop.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens there. Last thing I want to cover before we get to the interview with Georgia Dow. The Apple detailed its AppleBot web crawler, which is used by Siri and Spotlight, and its existence has kind of been known for a while, but Apple kind of finally admitted it and kind of explained what it's doing and what it's for. And obviously the most interesting aspect of this is, could it be a competition against, obviously, Google Search or the other search engines? And Shane, I know you did some investigating as far as the Topsy acquisition. I don't know if you could explain kind of how that fits in here.
So the short and long of it is that Apple is building Spotlight into a general purpose web search engine. The team running that project is the team that came from Topsy. We thought, a lot of people thought when they bought Topsy that it was about social search or becoming more socially competent because Apple has completely failed at that throughout its history. Now it looks like what they really care about is the ability, Topsy's ability, to index and search through billions and billions and billions of things. So yeah, I mean, I think it may be in a year or maybe even as soon as this fall when we see the next OS X, OS X weed, hopefully. You'll see this. Spotlight be, sure. You know, if you do a Spotlight search, it'll be roughly equivalent to Googling for whatever you want.
Right. And it already, and the new Spotlight already includes, what is it, Wikipedia, and there's some other sources kind of it pulls from, maybe Wolfram Alpha as well. So it kind of has some of those aspects slowly leaking into it. So it'd be interesting. And you can launch a search, a web search from Spotlight, I believe. Let me try this real quick here.
Yeah, you can do web searches on your iPhone, your iPad from Spotlight. You can do it on the Mac too. It goes straight to Yelp reviews and offers. It pulls all movie times. I think it's like Rotten Tomatoes or something. It has reviews from them on there. So there's all kinds of data that it's pulling to bypass Google and not have to use them.
Yeah, and then they can also push their like iTunes search results higher up. I just searched for Avengers: Age of Ultron, and of course, the iTunes album came up.
Which is potentially a huge problem for Google because iOS account mobile search has already overtaken desktop search in terms of volume, and iOS is a huge portion of that. Not to mention that iOS has a generally more affluent user base, which roughly, not exactly, but roughly translates into a better ad rate for Google. Mm-hmm. So if you see a scenario in which Apple replaces Google with, I mean, which is why Google pays so much money to be the default search provider on iOS and still does, and still makes all of their own products available, usually on iOS first, even.
Yeah.
If Apple makes a move that replaces Google with its own in-house stuff, then it's a potentially serious blow for Google, especially when they're already fighting Facebook for mobile ad dollars.
And it could have they've already removed Google as a default search provider for Siri. I mean, I by default now when I use Siri to search for something, I tell Siri to search Google so I don't end up with Bing results.
Yeah, it would also be interesting. Again, we had lots of articles this week about the Apple streaming music service and you know, when it might rebrand Beats to be a streaming music service. But once that finally launches and is available, again, that search could really be, I mean, imagine if you could just search for a song on your iPhone and then just play it, you know, just play the whole song because it interacts with the Apple streaming service plus iTunes. And if you pay for the subscription, then it's just kind of open for you across the deal. So, you know, that could definitely be useful to Apple.
And isn't Google's contract with Apple coming up this year? For I believe it expires.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So they either have to come up with a new contract, or Google has to figure out how to woo people back.
We don't know how much they pay, but they pay. Don't they pay Firefox? They pay Mozilla $200 and something million a year to be the default search provider.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So Firefox. The iOS deal has to be an order of magnitude higher.
Yeah.
I haven't even looked. I don't even know what Firefox looks like anymore. I haven't tried that. Well, we're going to go to the special interview with our guests. But before we go, why don't we, Neil, tell where people can find you on the internet.
You can read my stuff at Apple Insider, and I'm on Twitter at ThisIsNeil.
And Daniel, where can people find you?
I'm also on Apple Insider, and my Twitter is Daniel Aran, E-R-A-N.
All right. And Shane?
As with everyone else, I am on Apple Insider.
And you can find me there and follow me at Stephen Robles on Twitter. And now we go to the special interview with Georgia Dow and Jim Young. We recorded this Monday, so if you hear us say yesterday and stuff like that, it's actually referring to this past Sunday, May 3rd, and we hope you enjoy this. Well, I'm very excited today to have two special guests with us, Georgia Dow from iMore.com. Georgia, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jim Young is also here. He's the principal UX designer at Dell. And Jim, thanks for joining us too.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Stephen.
Awesome. Well, I thought it'd be interesting, the two of you, because George, I know, I think on the last iMore show, you were very positive on the Apple Watch. I know you said you're loving it. So I want to get that perspective. And Jim, being a UX designer, thought it'd be interesting to get your perspective too. But George, I heard your appearance on Twit yesterday, which was an awesome show.
Thank you.
Congrats on being on there. That's very cool.
I know. I was so excited.
That is awesome. That is a, I think, a tent pole or like, you know, goal of many people. But I was surprised.
I didn't even see it as a goal. I just figured I would never do it. So
well, there you go.
Wow. What am I doing here? Yeah.
No, it was awesome. You did great on it. And it was an awesome cast. I love Odakta on the show. He's pretty cool. I was surprised how down Leo was on the watch. In general, like he's just straight, does not like it at all. But anyways, there's a couple of specific things that I think are interesting. And we've talked about it on the Apple Insider, the other episodes, and I know you've talked about it on iMore. So anyway, I got the iPhone 6 Plus in the fall. I wanted the big one. I love it. It's great.
Do you put it in your pocket?
Well, here's the thing. I did before. I carried it in my pocket. I don't wear skinny jeans, so it's easier for me. But I do. I love the battery life. I love the bigger screen. I loved everything about it. I never had any qualms with it. And then when I got the watch, I told myself even before it came, I was like, I want to try and not have the phone on me or around me as much. And I have a mod from This Is Ground. It's like an iPad all case and all that kind of stuff. And it has an iPhone pocket in it. So I keep it in there as much as I can. And when I'm home, I put my phone in the bedroom and I don't even carry it on me.
That's and great. Good for you.
And it's, I mean, sometimes I still get it and check Twitter. So, you know, I'm not perfect. But I do it on purpose because...
Oh, that's horrible. You see, we expect perfection here.
I know. But in doing that, you know, the watch, again, there's lots of things not great about it. You know, third-party apps, and there's some other things we talk about. But as far as being distraction-free, I feel like it's helped me. It's helped me not be tied to the phone, been able to keep it, you know, away. And then when I interact with my kids or other, or, you know, just at dinner or whatever, like to not have the phone on me has been good. And now the iPhone 6 Plus, I finally feel like maybe it is kind of big. You know, I never thought that before, but now I do. So I'm curious if you guys have experienced that as far as, has it helped minimize being distracted or being dependent on the phone?
Okay, well, I'll give you from my perspective. So yeah. My phone actually is never actually like it's on, but it has no beeping, buzzing, ringing. It does nothing.
Right.
It will, you know, show me notifications when I go to my phone. So it's not a huge distraction for me. But when I need to use my phone, you know, having to call someone, having to check something, it's really nice to, because it's in my purse. It's hard to find. I hate opening it. And so it's absolutely amazing that, you know, I got a alert actually for this podcast, and just to remind me, get ready. And I had the alert. The phone is the alarm's going off, and I could turn it off on my watch. And I'm I don't have to find where my phone is and walk to it, and it beeps and you're stressed out. Amazing. Yeah. Plus, I don't miss phone calls because my phone makes no noise, so usually I'll miss every single phone call. But it will, the Taptic engine will alert me and let me know there's a phone call, and I can take a look and do I want to answer it or not. And I love that. That has freed me up to be able to not – it saved me time and stress throughout the day, which is, I think, just – it just relaxed me.
So you say your phone doesn't alert you to anything. Like, do you mean like, so nothing, even like VIP alerts or anything, like you have nothing?
I do not have any VIP alerts. I do. It does alert me to alarms.
Alarms. Yeah. So it's all the stuff you set. Like basically whenever someone tries to contact you, nothing really happens.
Nothing really happens. Like it's there and I'll I don't want to be a slave to my phone.
Right.
So I want, like, you know, if I'm at a movie, I'm at the movie. If I'm having dinner, I'm having dinner. And if it's an emergency, you know, I have notifications on my watch and it'll tell me if there's a phone call and if there's an alarm. That's it.
Yeah.
It's all I have that will bug me.
Were you?
And the rest, it's just me.
And I tried to, that's very good. aspirational, certainly, for myself. But that's really interesting. I'm trying to get over this now. So your phone does nothing. Now I'm trying to think maybe I should do this. Did you ever find yourself, I guess when you do check your phone, and you know, this is what probably many of us struggle with, those of us who care whether or not we're completely involved in our phones, like when you go to your phone to actually check something, whether it be email or text, you feel like you kind of get sucked down into the whirlpool of Twitter and then all this other kind of stuff. And does maybe the watch help relieve that somewhat?
It's kind of funny. I don't have Twitter on my watch. I don't use it there. Like for messages, I'll just answer the messages and they're quick and easy.
Yeah.
But yes, for Twitter, I'll get sucked into a Twitter loop because my thought process is that if you've sent me a message on Twitter, and that's very kind and thoughtful for you to do that and takes time out of your day, it is only right for me to reply to you. So if I get, like, you know, something big happens or something really popular and I get like 60 replies, I will reply to every single one of the 60 replies. And I get kind of stuck in this, like, Twitter, like vortex of, you know, politesse. But I don't mind that. So that's why I only go to Twitter when I have a few moments to be able to do that. And if not, you know, I'm just in and out. I tweet in, like, you know, every 10 hours. So, like, if you reply, I'll reply to you in, like, 10 hours.
Right. Which is funny. Well, when I tweeted at you for this, I didn't hear back, and I was like, I shouldn't have even asked or whatever. And then, like, I got a tweet, like, it was late, I think, or something. I was like, hours after. Maybe. It was just a long time after. I was like, what in the world?
Yeah.
So, well, that explains the mystery.
Right.
I will say, Twitter on the watch is not good.
No way.
But I do want to say Twitterific is the only way you can tweet from the watch. So I put that on the watch for no notifications or to check the timeline, but to actually dictate tweets in Twitterific, which is pretty cool. So, just want to throw that, because I wanted to tweet the other day, and I had my phone in the other room, and I'm like, I don't want to get, because then the same thing, if you go to tweet something, then you're going to check it a bunch. So I put Twitterific on the watch, dictated a tweet, and I was off. So that's pretty cool. So good on Twitterific for that. And I'm hoping Tweetbot will update for that soon, too. Jim, do you find the watch helps you be less distracted or more, or what has been your experience?
No, I love it. I think it's great because it basically takes everything that only takes a few seconds on the phone and kind of pulls it onto my wrist. And so it's quick response. There's nothing that you kind of linger doing on the watch. And I think it's great. So that convenience is really, really great for me. And so being able to just, you know, acknowledge something that's come through as a notification and then dismiss it. I love that, to be able to do it on the watch. And I too have this iPhone 6 Plus. So I, you know, the larger screen, it's in my pocket, or if it's sitting on the desk, it's great to not have to be so tied to it or to use it for the things that only take a few seconds as opposed to a few minutes, to use. And where the phone can also kind of suck you in and you get kind of distracted and you do other things as well in addition to respond to that notification, the watch doesn't do that. The watch keeps you kind of isolated to that one thing, and then, you know, you dismiss it or you respond to it, and then you're done and you move on. So I think in that sense, it does help to kind of minimize the length of the distractions, and you know, it makes it a little more manageable for me at least. So I actually think it's great at doing that. I've heard it said, you know, that, you know, while you work on your laptop when you have hours of work to do, you grab your smartphone when you have minutes of stuff to do, and then the watch kind of fits in this spot, this really great spot where things like glances and notifications only take seconds to do.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a great example of like the way to use what the watch is good at and what it is there for. If you need to send out like emails and that, you shouldn't be using your watch. No. That's not what it's there for.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and I think that's why Leo was a little bit more unhappy with it, was that, you know, he was wanting to be able, he wants a longer interaction with it, which I think that the watch is going to get better at as we get more third party applications that have had more time to make better with.
Right.
I like the fact that it's like quick and easy, and it separates me from my technology.
Yeah.
So if you want more of your technology, this is just, it's just a conduit. You know, this is like the little tiny shuttlecraft to your spaceship. If you're going to go into battle, you're going to take the spaceship. This is just the shuttlecraft.
Yeah. Like with the iPhone, when we saw it introduced, you know, multi-touch and the accelerometer and technologies like that were exciting when the iPhone first came out. But even just now, like with Research Kit and some of the apps, only now are we seeing some even deeper use cases, like where you can blow into the microphone of your phone and it can, you know, register what kind of your asthma, like they have the apps for that. Or even, you know, with tremors on the touch screen, it can measure a tremor using multi-touch on the phone. And I feel like in that sense, technologies even 8 years ago that were cool, but now they're showing like real purpose. I think it's going to be the same thing with a watch. I think it's introducing technologies that are cool, things like force touch and having a device like this on your wrist all the time. It has cool features now, but I think, again, you give it years and it's really going to show some maturity and show some usefulness. You know, one thing too, I mean, Apple Pay for me is still magical on the watch. I don't know how often you guys have gotten to do it, but I used it on my 6 Plus, obviously, a lot, but sometimes I found it didn't work. I pulled my phone away too fast, or the Touch ID wasn't perfect. So I've had to do it again, but like Apple Watch or Apple Pay on the watch is just ridiculous. I mean, and every time I do it, either the people at Walgreens or if I go through the drive-thru or something, it dumbfounds them every time. So I feel like something like that is pretty cool. And obviously they haven't seen Android Wear doing that because it's like a first time. They say, I've never seen anything like that. So I feel like that's another positive, but
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Stephen. And if you couple that with the fact that, you know, some 3,500 apps came out with developers who did not have watches to test it on, that's pretty impressive, that alone. And so to think about how the improvements and the optimizations they're going to be able to make, and then leveraging, now that they have the hardware, leveraging that hardware to its full potential, I think there's some really exciting things down the road.
Well, you guys are going to make me cry because, unfortunately, I'm in Canada and we have no Apple Pay here.
Oh, that's right.
So I have been waiting to be able to use Apple Pay on my watch.
Yes.
And no, I haven't been able to yet.
I know, it's the same thing with Renee because he doesn't.
We have all the NFC chips. We have everything already ready for Apple Pay here.
Right.
Like I've been able to, I can take my credit card and just tap it and be able to pay. So we're already set up, and there's no Apple Pay here at all. Not watch, not at all.
I'm so sorry.
So very sad. I'm waiting.
Well, one day it will be a magical experience for
you.
Well,
I'm so happy that you guys are enjoying it so much.
It was cool. And,
it is really cool.
And even like Joanna Stern in her review of the watch, she said, you know, one of the coolest experiences was she went for a run, left her phone at home. She had Bluetooth headphones, so she was able to listen to her music from the watch, no other devices. On her run, she went to Whole Foods, bought something with her Apple Watch with Apple Pay, and was able to go back home. And like that, this whole thing was very freeing and a cool experience. So,
see, I didn't know that you could also use Apple Pay from your watch without your phone within the 30 feet.
Yeah, no, actually, you don't even need to have your phone with you, right, Stephen?
Right, I mean,
you
can, not at all. It's funny because
I'm even more upset now.
Because when I
because that's so amazing.
We better stop talking about Apple Pay. We want to keep Georgia on this podcast.
It's totally. It's it just makes life so much easier. I hate having to take out my credit card and find things. So. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it will work without your phone, because when you set up your watch, all your passbook stuff moves over, if you notice, like your Starbucks stuff or whatever. But no Apple Pay cards are set up even when you pair with your phone. And you have to pair each card with the watch separately as you would as if it were a new phone. And the watch information is stored on the secure element on the watch.
That's correct. Yeah.
So the phone can be, you know, across the country and you can still use Apple Pay. So, well, hopefully you get to experience that soon, Georgia. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's my hardship.
I think it's also going to be interesting. You know, obviously, I don't think a lot of, you know, teenagers and younger people have Apple Watches just yet, as they just came out. But it was a bizarre experience for me. I went to a flute convention. My wife plays flute. And at this flute convention, it was basically all teenage girls, like between the ages of 12 and 17. And I thought I was a pretty techie person. And when I was at this convention, seeing these young ladies use their iPhones and smartphones, it just boggled my mind. Like, the speed at which they do things and how they use the devices is totally different than how I do it. And it really took me back. So I'm going to be real curious how younger age demographics interact with a watch. And maybe digital touch will be more, and like sending heartbeats and stuff like that will be more, useful to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling that'll take a while, because I think that the price points for the watch are just a little bit out of their range. And so it's going to have to be a really special event or occasion or Christmas or whatever, you know, a special holiday for them to be able to get it. It's not to say that I don't think they'll want it. You know, I mean, my daughter, when I got mine, she was kind of peeking over going, so what does it do? And she was curious and played around with it for a little bit. And so she's definitely interested in it just because she loves her iPhone. So I think that halo effect will happen. I just think it may be, you know, some time before, you know, either whether the price points come down or just there's just more attainable at key times or seasonal times is when they'll be able to get a hold of it.
So, Georgia, I know you're so up on the watch, so I'm curious, you know, obviously third-party apps and there are other things that could be fixed. What is it that bothers you about the watch that you wish were different right now?
There are a few things that bug me about the watch. It is a little bit difficult to interface with Siri. So, like, I'll say, you know, I'll lift up the watch and I'll be like, hey, Siri, you know, call this. And so, like, I think that what the watch doesn't do everything, which is fine with me, but what it does, it should do well.
Yeah.
And the only way for me to make a phone call if I'm, say, like driving and I don't want to use my Bluetooth is to be able to do that. And so I think that should get a little bit better, how to call up Siri without having to double press, which you can do as well. But the cool part is me being able to talk to my watch and it just kind of replies.
Right.
And so I think that's good. And I think that they have to work on the accuracy of the, here, I'm going to try it, the photoplethysmography on the watch, so that it's a little bit more accurate, which, again, in time they'll be able to, you know, figure that out so that it's a little bit of a better algorithm. Because if I am working out and, you know, it says that I wasn't working out, it does bug me a little.
Yeah, well,
I was like, no, really, I should get that little achievement. Where's my little gold 5-minute achievement?
Where's my parade? Yeah.
No, I want that.
I will say.
And that kind of puts people, like, you know, you end up getting this negative effect when you interact with something, expect something, and then don't get it.
Right. So when I wrote the review for Apple Insider, one of my biggest pain points was Siri, because I was very excited about to use Hey Siri without having to start anything. You know, because it works on the phone when it's plugged into power, but when you have the iPhone 6 Plus, that never happens during the day because the battery lasts all day. So I was looking forward to that. And that was the one thing, you know, it works maybe 60% of the time for me.
Right.
And it seems like if you're in an app or something, it doesn't work. Hey Siri has to be on watch face.
It's something strange. Like, so a tip for everyone, if you're trying to use it, you want to first turn on your watch before you say Hey Siri. So you want to lift it up, see your watch face, or if you have it onto whatever application is playing, and then you start speaking and say Hey Siri, and you have to then catch it in enough time that it's still on.
Right. Well, that's,
so because if it turns off in the middle of you saying it, you have to restart as well.
Well, and what I did when I was trying to do it first, I would say Hey Siri, I would wait for it to give me the taptic feedback, and then I would start talking. But that pause, it would always cut off what I was trying to say. And it was very frustrating because I'm like, you just told me to speak. Like, you just tapped me. Why did you stop? So I found it works best. Like, how I noticed how they do it in all the demos. Like, when Kevin Lynch demoed it on stage, you just say, Hey Siri, and you just talk. Like, you don't even I don't even pause. I don't even pause anymore. And it doesn't even, Siri hasn't even come up yet, but I'm telling it what to do.
Yeah.
And somehow it catches up. Like it catches up.
Yeah, it makes me feel worried though, because I'm always worried that here I am talking.
And no one's listening to me.
You know, I like to know that Siri's like listening. It's almost like having a conversation with someone. They're like, are you listening to me?
Is there a deeper issue there in Georgia?
No, I'm just kidding. You're going to do this for me or not?
Yeah, and well, and that's why I love, you know, at least Siri on the phone, especially when you want to send a message, it'll say, are you ready to send? Or it'll, you know, it could read it back to you if you need it to. And that's something I miss that on the watch, you know, because just to send a message, you still can't do it with only voice. You do have to tap the screen to send it. And you can't go back or anything. So the Siri was my biggest pain point, I think, because I was most looking forward to it on the phone.
Plus, it's one of the main ways in which you interface with the watch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And especially like trying to tap an app, like on the app home screen, if you have a ton of them, can be a pain. But Siri can launch them really well. So a lot of times I'll say, hey, Siri, launch Overcast, and it goes right to it. And that's...
You see, but I forget the names of my applications.
Yeah. And I did,
right? I understand some of them, you know just what they are, like launch Shazam or something. But some of them I'm like, I don't, like, you know, what do I call that one? I don't know.
Right. And I use Pocket Casts as an app, but I've been using Overcast because it's the only one with a watch app. So for the first couple of times, I would say, Siri, launch Pocket Cast, and it wouldn't do anything. I get mad at it, but it's because it's not on the watch. So I think it needs to work. I also think, you know, the glances, some of them are pretty useful, but Jim,
Which are the ones that you find useful?
Exactly. So I loved, you know, I almost find them more useful as shortcuts to the apps that I want to use. Because like I love the Dark Sky app on the watch. So I would almost use the glance as a shortcut to get to it, because you can just tap the glance and launch it. Because the glance itself would take a while to load, and it wouldn't be useful, but it's useful as a shortcut. And Jim, being a UX designer, I was curious if you had any thoughts on this, but I find like I have some glances here, like I have a CNN headline app, I have my calendar glance, so I see my next event. And again, some of them are nice, but like to navigate it, if you're on the far right glance and you want to get all the way to the left, you look like a crazy person, just like frantically waving your hand on the watch, trying to scroll through them all. So I feel like, one, yes, they could be improved, but two, there needs to be a better way to actually access them quickly or shuffle through them quickly. Because like the notification center on the iPhone, when you have widgets, you know, you have a big screen, you can see multiple widgets at a time. It's not that much work to scroll up and down through your widgets, but for the glances, it can be kind of a pain in the neck.
Yeah, I
agree. I limit my glances to just five screens. So told myself after using it for the first couple of weeks, or no, it hasn't been a couple of weeks. First, you know, 5 or 6 days, I decided, you know what, this is not helpful for me to go to the bottom, you know, swipe up and having to go, okay, is it the 7th one, 8th one, 10th one? I mean, and having to swipe back and forth to find it. So I decided, you know what, 4 or 5, maybe max 6, you know, glances that I kind of have over time, keep them the same order, and then I'll know where they are and not to have more than that. So my tendency right now, and this may change, is not to place a lot of apps down there as far as glances are concerned, but access the apps themselves if I want the information, and then just keeping the bare minimum of being able to, you know, put my watch to sleep or to, you know, to not disturb, or I do have the Move, rather the, you
activity.
Know, the Move rings on there. Yeah. And then controls to the music if I have a podcast playing on it. So I just limit it to those few things so that it's manageable to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually talking about like playing things off of your watch. That's the one thing that I was, quite disappointed in. I had expected that I would be able to like stream the music from my phone and have it play on my watch. I assumed that I had to be within range because it's actually going to be stored upon my phone.
Right.
But just like listening to a phone call and I can hear it on my watch, I thought that I could do that with music as well. And I was sad when I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to play some music. And I'm like, wait, but it's not coming through the cruddy watch, you know.
Yeah. No, it's not.
System. I'm like, why is that not? That cannot happen. I'm like, I want it to stream.
My son was playing with it and he hit the now playing play button, and my phone was like in the other room, and it started talking because a podcast was on there. I was like, "What in the world?" And I, you know, I didn't realize. So it's that is
so
a little bizarre.
You have to use your headphones if you want some Bluetooth headphones, and then it will play on the headphones. But
correct.
And I guess how often would you want it to play on your watch? I do. I don't know.
It's just it's a weird like it's a degree of removal from like you're pressing play on the watch and it's playing something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I totally get that. I was listening to you again on Twit, and I thought it was funny how you do not like the Mickey clock face. I thought that was hilarious. I don't either.
You don't either. Is he not alone?
Because it was like every Apple person was paid to say they like the Mickey watch face. I mean, Kevin Lynch said it in everything, and I think Tim Cook said it. And I'm like, listen, you don't all like it. One of you is lying. You don't all like the Mickey watch face. I totally get that. But someone yesterday asked me, like, hey, have you tried the Mickey watch face? I was like, no, but let me try it. I'll show you. And it was like 4 p.m., like 4:40 or something like that. And when I went to the Mickey watch face, it was just a garble of limbs. Like, his two arms were down by his feet, and you can't see anything. You can't see what numbers they're pointing to. And I'm like, this is the worst watch ever. It blocks the entire view of the numbers. So I'm with you, George. I don't get the Mickey watch face.
Yeah, he's just not. It's just not my thing. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I guess he's cute. I don't know.
No, he's not even cute.
My wife likes the Mickey watch face, and
I'm sorry.
But there's one reason why she loves Disney. She would retire and work at Disney if she could. And so I think that affinity to Disney just gives her reason to like the watch face. But yeah, I'm with you both. I don't find it. I mean, I'm a little more utilitarian as far as I want to see additional information too. And so some of the other watch faces just seem to lend themselves a little better to the way I want to see things. I mean, it's cute. It's something to, I guess, show off for a moment, but not to have as my permanent watch face.
And when I discovered,
which watch faces do you each use?
Right, that was my next question. I do like the fact that you can delete clock faces totally. It's like the Mickey doesn't even show up when I try to choose a watch face.
You can
swipe up and delete them. So I mean, you can literally swipe and delete all the ones that are stock and just have your customized ones, which I've done. So that's nice when you want to switch to just the ones that you like. I liked the motion for a while, just the jellyfish, because it looked pretty.
I did have the jellyfish for a little while as well.
And I liked the astronomy with the globe. Mm-hmm. I think that looks very
really
good.
Cool.
So I use those when I'm not needing a lot of information. I like the utility a lot, basically just the hands and the dashes. But I work in the travel industry, so it's nice having a world clock so I can have Middle Eastern time on there. Mm-hmm. And I have my next event. So I like the utility most of the time. And when I have a lot of events during a day, I like the modular to have the next event big in the middle of the screen.
Yeah, that's the one thing I like. I like the utility because of that, because you can have, you know, what is your next thing that's on your list right on your wrist, so you're not going to forget it.
Right.
I agree with you on that.
I also like, I was dressed up a little bit the other day, and I went with the simple clock face, and I stripped everything off of it, and it just has the hands, and they're white. So when I lift my watch, it stayed as a completely black face with just the second, minute, and hour hand in white, and I thought that was pretty slick.
So it looks really stylish, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks very chic. I just wouldn't know what time it was all the time.
Yeah, neither did I. I didn't care. I just wanted
to
look cool.
Is it 7? Is it 8? I don't know. It could be it's somewhere.
Something. Yeah, I don't know how to tell time, I guess. But Jim, what do you like to use?
Oh my gosh, Stephen! I don't know. I have much to offer here because it's what you said is almost exactly how I use my watch. So I love utility. That's probably where I'm at about 70% of the time. Yeah. I'll switch over to modular if I want to see what's next right up front. Usually when I'm working, those are the two I use. And then if it's casual, I'm out and about, I might switch over to like the jellyfish, or I might switch over to the globe one or the astronomy one. But very similar use cases as far as I'm concerned with what you do.
I was a little disappointed in myself. I thought I would love to be able to use the analog clock faces more often, and I just can't tell the time quick enough for my taste. Like I was not a watch wearer previously.
That's why you have the watch to think for you.
Oh, that's very true.
No, it's true. I know. Calculate.
Right. And I was not a watch wearer previously. So I was not been used to, seeing analog, hands. So I like seeing the digital ones when I just really need to get things done, I guess, you know.
But wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I did grow up with watches, so I can kind of read them relatively quickly. But and so I do prefer them because just from growing up, I just you know, love some of the analog watches that I've had, and Cartier and some other ones. But so I like them. I prefer that, and that's the one I have the most. And then I'll switch over to the kind of straightforward utility one when the modular one when I just want the data in front of me.
Yeah. Well, Georgia, how about you? What do you keep it on?
So I started off, I was really excited with the butterflies.
Okay. it's very cool.
I was so excited. Yeah. You're going to have a butterfly. It's going to flutter.
Yeah.
I was upset that every time you raise your hand, it's a different butterfly, which it was cool and sad at the same time.
You
I
want
was
a
like,
consistency.
I don't like this butterfly. I'm going to lower my hand and raise it again so I get the butterfly that I want. And so I was with a butterfly at first, and then I went to the jellyfish. I tried the flowers for a little while. They didn't interest me. The jellyfish were kind of cool.
Yeah.
And now I was on the utility at first, but I could not change the colors to what I wanted it to be.
Yeah, it's
and
not,
so now, yeah. Yeah, it's just,
You're limited.
Oh, it's just the second hand, right, that you can change the color on, I believe, on the utility one?
And the date number. So what are you on now?
So now I'm using color. So I end up getting to choose four different accessories to that, things that are going to be on the watch face as well.
I have
like the battery life of my phone, temperature, a time in another location, my activity monitor, and a stopwatch, which is great because you can click on all of those and they open the applications. So that's just my quick open the application that I may need to want to open anyways without having to find it on my watch or use Siri.
Yeah. And on the, I think the latest talk show, Gruber was talking about, it'd be nice if when there's like, if you have an event complication or if you have a timer complication on the watch, when it's just showing zeros or when there's no event, like it would either just disappear or say something else. Because like some will just say no events. And it's like, well, I don't, it's kind of ugly to have on a clock face to just say no events. So
And you might not want anyone to know that you're not busy because, you know, they'd be, you'd be like, do you want to go out? And you'd be like, no, I don't want to. They're like, but there's no event on your watch. Like,
oh, exactly.
Totally.
It's
I just didn't mark it down.
Instant accountability. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And thing with the motion one too, I had it on the jellyfish for a while and I wanted to show people, you know, like, hey, check this out. And, but when I would pull my watch up, like it would take so long for the jellyfish to appear and to float around.
They're
they're
hiding.
Yeah, they would get disinterested and they'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, so no, it's cool. So
it's a butterfly. They appear almost immediately.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, I don't know. I felt funny with a butterfly on my wrist. My kids like to do rotate the globe and stuff with the digital crown though on the astronomy one.
Am I the only one that tried to zoom in?
I tried to zoom in. Because it shows your location, so it looks like a map.
I'm like, let's get closer. If I could zoom in onto the globe, that would be it for me.
There have been a couple of times where I try to zoom in on something and nothing, and it just doesn't. Like I expected to.
Watch is like, nope.
Right, and like, well, even when you're on like the app screen, I was hoping you could zoom in farther so all the app things are bigger, but it eventually just launches an app if you just keep zooming in. And I'm like, well, I just want them all bigger. Like I don't care if I have to scroll more. On them bigger so I can see them better, but so anyway, all right, well, Georgia, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you if they want more?
You can find me on imore.com, and also you can find me on Twitter. It's at Georgia_Dow.
Very cool. And Jim, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter as well, Jim Young, and they can reach me there and communicate that way.
All right, well, thank you guys so much.